All you timeless children with your predictions and flashbacks, trying to get ahead. What makes you think I can see you? What makes you think I believe you? Dreams inside my bed. Have you heard the family news? Stepping up willingly, shot has come to pass. All the dreams were flying, all the thoughts were dying. Heard from the past.
Welcome back to the prediction trade. If you can trade it or bet on it, you can bet we're gonna talk about it on the prediction trade. Each week, we search out mispriced markets among politics, sports, entertainment, and cultural events that you can legally wager on through prediction markets. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host. That's Garrett Baldwin. He's the editor at large at Luckbox Magazine. He's also an economist and an active prediction market trader. And Mike Ruddy, the producer and also an editor at Luckbox Magazine. So you get three editors in a room together. What do you talk about? The prediction markets, and that's what we talk about each week. Today, we're going to be looking at wagering opportunities among the final four in March Madness, the upcoming Georgia governor's race, and Trump's chances in the GOP nomination for president in 2024. And of course, this weekend's Grammys coming up. So lots to cover today. Garrett, did you get a chance to watch the Grammys?
I did not. I received a text at around 11:30 that I needed to go on Twitter to see the slap heard around and seen around the world. But to be completely honest with you, the only thing that I knew was that you were right about Best Director, and I was wrong.
Well, I think enough's been said about the slap. Quite frankly, this show's a lot more interested in data and probabilities and trends that we can exploit, you know, for betting opportunities and wagering opportunities as opposed to anyone's opinion. But I guess I would simply say if there is a if there's an over-under on next year's Oscars for narcissism and privilege and pandering, I think I'll bet the over. That being said, the ratings were the second lowest in Oscar history. They were up from the previous year, around 15 million, up from as low as 10 million. But remember, the Oscars once saw an audience of 40 million viewers annually, so the show's taken a decline. But you did mention a positive note. The thesis that we talked about last episode was that Jane Campion, as the director of Power of the Dog, the only female director that was nominated, was a sure winner. She was a Luckbox lockbox at 73 to 80 cents, which is where she was priced at that point. So that came in as expected. But more importantly, we looked over to the best adapted screenplay category, where it was an opportunity to vote for another woman and not Jane Campion, to kind of send a message about her dissing the Williams sisters, which was a little faux pas she made accepting a prior award. That was a 50-cent buy, so we were able to double up on that trade as well. So yes, we had a good Oscars, but we can move on then.
Well, before we do that, Jeff, there is one last thing. Remember, this is the only industry that has this type of pageantry. So we saw 10 million people, you know, effectively taking part in it last year. It continues to drop. Could you imagine if other trade associations, remember, this is a trade association award ceremony. Could you imagine if the Paper Packaging Council or the Association for Renaissance Martial Arts had this type of award ceremony every single year? I think just people are kind of turned off by the entire process. And remember, again, at the end, it's just a trade association award ceremony. There's way too much politics, way too much going on in a single event. It certainly is not the 1970s and 1980s anymore.
Yeah, we did manage to squeeze an opinion out. So I hear you, and I don't disagree, that's for sure. But we'll be there to wager it next year. There's something about the Academy that's pretty predictable, right? And we know how they vote, and those trends exist. So we were able to capitalize on it. But let's jump into the trade segment now, because we want to take a look at the bundle you put together on the NCAA Final Four. And we're in the game right now. So tell us about the bundle that you proposed in the last episode and where we stand right now.
So we had effectively did a bundle of different teams, and we had four teams that we were looking at, two with relatively very long odds, and then two blue bloods that are now in the final four. So Duke was at 15-1. Villanova was at 12-1. Iowa State was at 100-1, and Miami was at 70-1. Well, those two teams at the end are knocked out, and now you have Duke on one side, and then you have Villanova on the other going up against Kansas. The question is how to address this moving forward. If you think about it in just relative terms, bet effectively $400 to win $1,200 if Villanova wins it all, and $1,500 if Duke wins it all. Looking at how to address this moving forward, because Kansas is now at a 180, 100 to win 180, I effectively am just not going to touch Kansas. But with UNC currently trading at 5-1, I'm going to throw $100 onto UNC, and then that will effectively wipe the entire thing out at $500 overall betting. Would return $500 if UNC ends up winning. That just allows me to take that risk off the table. I'm just going to have to let it ride with Kansas, because at that point, by betting on Kansas and getting exotic, you effectively eliminate all returns across the entire bundle.
So as a recap, you had a bundle of four teams. Yep. Two of them remain alive. And what were the initial odds of those two teams that remain alive right now?
So Duke was at 15-1, and Villanova was at 12-1. So a total, a return would for this, if Villanova were to win it all, would be $1,200 bet on a $400 total bet of the bundle, and $1,500 on Duke based on the $400 that was bet on those four teams at the exact same bet level.
All right, and you have to fill for Jay Wright's team.
Yes.
The loss of Justin Moore in the final minutes of their prior week's victory was really crushing for them. Villanova, in light of their free throw percentage, you know, this team is averaging 83% at the line, right? That's a record. That's an NCAA record. They'll end the season with a record. And the national average for free throws in the NCAA is 73%. And, of course, they went 100% in the last game. They were 12 for 12 or 15 for 15. And I was all ready for that matchup with Villanova where the free throws would make the difference. You got a team shooting 73%, one doing 90 to 100%. And in a defensive struggle, it's going to be the differentiator. So we had a money ball play all lined up, but you take out Justin Moore and, the 3-point and percentage and the assist rate, that's all going to take a dive when you put him on the sidelines. Turnovers are going to turn upwards. So, the problem with Villanova, if there was any problem, was this team lacked depth. Take away one of their leading starters, and you really can't take them. You can't play them going forward. So I think Kansas then becomes the pick there, right? The likely pick. But Garrett, and I know this is really right in your sweet spot, if the so certainly on the money line, Kansas is the play. But if the spread is large enough, those free throws could still make a difference, right?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. And again, I would not just simply discount Villanova because of one player. Remember, Auburn lost, I believe, their best player or their number one or two player earlier in that tournament not long ago when they made a relatively deep run. So look, you're in the Final Four. Anything can happen. It is a national stage. We've seen some wild things occur. I just simply because Kansas, Kansas has been the team with the least amount of flaws so far, but certainly this can still be a game. There has not been a significant move in this spread. 4.5 points is not a whole lot, considering the fact that, Villanova lost one of their two best players moving forward. So again, that's why I'm willing to just continue to let it run with Villanova. Kansas still has a relatively difficult path through multiple blue bloods programs.
Right. So how about handicapping the UNC Duke game for us?
This is really, really difficult, isn't it? Because this is the first time that Duke and UNC have ever met in the NCAA tournament, which is very crazy to think about. But here we are with this all ACC final. And this is another interesting statistic. Coach K is 50-49 career against UNC. So you know that UNC is salivating at the prospect of knocking him out of the tournament on his last, in what could be, would be his last game, and removing the possibility that he would have a winning record against UNC over time. It's those little tiny X factors that sit out there. Duke has, split the series this year with UNC. You saw UNC really blow them out in Coach K's last home game. That was a really emotional game. And certainly listening to a lot of the previous Duke players who won national championships, who played in Final Fours, players saying, I could not have played in that last game at Duke because it was so emotional. But so I think that that kind of emotion being lifted in the way that Duke has really played, I think that Duke is going to rally and win this game. I actually do think it's going to be closer than 4 points, but the over-under, that's a really tough one. I'm not going to touch that, but I would probably bet UNC, but I anticipate that Duke is going to win this game by 2 or 3 points.
And on the money line bet, Duke would be my play as well. So we've got our bets in, but the good news is we're riding in on your bundle from last week. So thanks again for that. Let's move on to Georgia. We're going to switch over to politics now, which means we're moving over to the Predictit platform, of course, the prediction market for political wagering over at predictit.org. And the reason that we're going to take a look at Georgia is because it was back in the news today. It's the GOP governor's nomination race over on Predicted. It reads as, who will win the 2022 Georgia Republican gubernatorial nomination? And out in front at 72% or 72 cents, up a penny on the day, is Brian Kemp. And his contender is David Perdue. And of course, David Perdue is the Trump candidate. And evidence of that was Trump's visit to Georgia this past weekend, where he stumped for him, including comments like this.
If there's one thing the people of Georgia need to know about this race, it's that Brian Kemp, he sold you out. He didn't look. He didn't want to look. He didn't want anything to do with it. He didn't want anything to do with it. Kemp has repeatedly caved to Stacey Abrams. I think he's afraid of her. Why is he afraid of her?
Whew.
So this is an interesting race for a number of reasons, right? You know, just to eliminate any mystery, I think I put Brian Kemp as a luck box lockbox at 72 cents. I'm going to ring the bell. And that's what it's looking at right now. But obviously, Trump is against Perdue and or in favor of Perdue and against Kemp because Kemp didn't go to bat for him to challenge the Georgia election results during the last general election. That's his grudge there, and he's and that's why he's proxying on behalf of Perdue. That being said, first of all, do you have a view on this race on Kemp versus Perdue before we move on?
Well, it's really interesting to watch this because Herschel Walker was asked about this recently, and he said, I don't like either of these candidates right now because his focus is on unification of the party. And I think that that's really what this whole situation is about, because we'll talk about who, which party will win the 2022. You're going to see significant division, and because you have such a such division around both of these candidates, I would propose that we see a possibility that whoever loses this effectively sits out the 2022 election, and some of their supporters do, just like we saw with that election in 2020 with the Senate races.
That's an interesting angle. Well, as I said, I consider Kemp to be an absolute shoe-in, and I do own this position, buying Kemp in the low 70s. To win the election. That election's coming up when, Mike? Do we have a date on that? That election's coming up shortly. It's only in a couple months, or the gubernatorial nomination. But let's take a look at what the averages say right now. Right now, according to the RCP average, Kemp is in front 46.5% to 37.5%. So a 9-point lead, according to the Real Clear Politics polling average. And the most recent poll was done by Fox News, and there's an 11-point lead for Kemp, 50-39. So it looks like Kemp has a commanding position. And yep. This is obviously an important race because it speaks to the broader question. And that allows us to take a look at another market here. And that market would be who will win the 2024 Republican presidential nomination. Now over at Predicted, this is the market.
Mm-hmm.
The who will win the 2024 Republican presidential nomination market. 24.5 million shares have been traded. Mike's brought it up on the screen, and you can see that Donald Trump's out in front at 38 cents. Ron DeSantis is behind at 28 cents. Yet it is clearly conventional wisdom in the media, particularly among Democrats, that Trump is running again. Mm-hmm. But this implies, according to the prediction markets, that the race is a little bit closer. Now, we've got plenty of time with November out in front of us by still quite a distance to talk about presidential politics. But I'd like to kick this conversation off early, and maybe it's a contrarian viewpoint, but I am a no on Trump. I do not believe that Trump is going to get the Republican nomination. I haven't believed it for some time. And I think races like what we're seeing in Georgia are going to be a perfect example of why. You will see that Kemp is going to go on and win that race in Georgia without Trump's endorsement. In fact, it's an anti-Trump vote. And I think Trump's coattails are not as strong as we believe them to be, or the media is making them out to be. I think the Democrats want to continue to run against Trump. And I think Republicans want to move on. And I think that's obviously that makes DeSantis the one to buy right now as the next front runner. So I see Trump as buying no shares at 62%. I see DeSantis as a buy at 28 cents now for a trade. I think another candidate's going to emerge, like maybe Mike Pompeo, who I think I think he is a potential candidate to trade up from 4 cents. But I'd like to get your take on it, Garrett. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you on DeSantis. I live in Florida. But keep in mind, despite the fact that there is pressure, you know, we the media and Democrats would love to run against Trump, that infrastructure already exists against DeSantis as well. It exists now. I mean, we see in the national media anything that happens down here in Florida. And to be completely honest with you, we're not even paying attention to half the stuff that's happening. It becomes national news. So it's clear to me, I think, why one of the key signals that you need to pay attention to is that the media is so hyper-focused on DeSantis, all social, political, economic, COVID policy. They really, truly do view him as the front runner. But again, moving forward, in that little world of those smaller picks, the Tim Scotts, the Mitt Romneys, the Mike Pompeo, that is almost like a bias trade. There's a lot of people who are kind of like trying to talk themselves into the idea that it's not going to be Trump or DeSantis, and not recognizing the flaws that exist with those candidates as well. Mitt Romney's not going to win the GOP nomination. You and I have talked about this. I mean, you can talk about people in the middle of the road, but you're going to have a election. Remember, all of these elections are driven by the fringes and the more red meat policy people on the right and on the left. That is who decides the primary votes.
The middle still decides. That's
in the national election, but
in,
not
in the national in the national
but
election,
the primaries.
But that's absolutely right. The middle decides the national election, but not the primary vote. And that's right. So are we in agreement then? Trump will be? Trump's going to be the nominee or no?
We are. That Trump is not going to be the nominee. I do not believe that he will be the nominee either. I like both of your bets. And I do think that one thing that is, I agree with your analysis on what's happening in Georgia. This is really a sample of what the GOP wants to do versus what Trump's kind of organization is going to push for. And a lot of people do want to move on from the talking points around the 2020 election. You just heard at some of these campaign events, a lot of that rhetoric around the 2020 election. Remember, this is about the future. It's about 2024.
Okay. Well, let's move on as well. We're going to move to the Grammys. They're coming up this weekend. We just had the Oscars, and we're just talking about, you know, dissing award shows, but but the Grammys a little bit different. Everyone, music is still the great unifier, and we have a chance to, you know, and of course we had a tragic loss in the music world a couple last weekend, but we'll see how the Grammys adapt to that. I'm sure we'll see a tribute by the Foo Fighters. But let's get right to one pick that seems to stand out for me, and it's in the Song of the Year category. Of course, this takes us over to Kalshi.com, the first registered prediction market by the CFTC, where you can legally bet on the outcomes of different cultural, economic, and financial and world events. And they have several categories for the Grammys, including Song of the Year. Now, I focused in on Song of the Year because Album of the Year is a little bit more complicated. There's a lot more politics there. Record of the Year, by the way, the distinction Song of the Year versus Record of the Year, which seems to be a fine nuance to many, but Song of the Year is really about the composer and the lyricist and the artist. It's truly about the artist first and foremost for Song of the Year, where Record of the Year includes production and editing and the label, and other people are part of that team. But in the Grammy Song of the Year category, I think we have a real standout here, and it's Olivia Rodrigo at 70 cents for Driver's License for that song. Not my kind of music, to be very, very clear, but you cannot negate the fact that there's been 1.3 billion Spotify streams on this song. The next runner-up is from Billie Eilish, who, of course, won a couple years ago as Best New Artist and Grammy of the Year and Best Album. She has less than half that many streams for Happier Than Ever, and then the list goes lower and lower. But 1.3 billion streams. The Grammys like these kind of feel-good, coming-of-age songs. I think it's a shoe-in. It's a lockbox at 70 cents. I don't mind admitting, I think some of that price is due to my recent buying. I was buying in the 60s, and now it's up to 70, and I think that's a lock trade to go forward. Any comments on this?
I really, can I just bet that I'm going to feel old on Sunday? Is that possible? Is that a market? I look at this and I say, yeah. I don't know what any of this is. I apologize. I'm out. Well,
you're not missing much. My personal favorite, but again, you know, opinions are not that important on this show. I liked Kanye's Donda 2 album. That's what I would have picked, but that's just not the way things work. Olivia Rodrigo's up for 7 awards, including Record of the Year, Album of the Year, Best Pop Solo Performance, and Best Pop Vocal Album. And only 5 artists have won Best New Artist and Album of the Year in the same year. One of them was Bob Newhart back in 1961, but more recently that'd be Lauryn Hill, Norah Jones, and Billie Eilish. But I think while Album of the Year is likely going to go her way, I wouldn't bet on that. I like the sure thing, Song of the Year, Olivia Rodrigo at 70 cents.
All right.
But let's move on to something that you have a little bit more interest.
Sunday, Jeff.
Okay, well, I know you're going to have more interest in this category because it's interest rates. And it moves to a question that's over on Kalshi. It's a Kalshi market, and it's what Fed interest rates are going to be as a result of the July 2022 meeting. Where will Fed interest rates be as a result of the July 2022 meeting? And this is a bracketed market, you know, starts at over a quarter of a basis point, over 50 bips, over 75 bips, over 1 point or over 1.25%, that's trading at 73 cents. So the market says there is a 73% probability that interest rates as a result of the July 2022 meeting are going to exceed 1.25%. Now, I know you have a strong feeling on this market and you've convinced me, and I'm going to let you convince our listeners, but you also have a tool that you want to share with us as well that I think goes into some of your underwriting on this market. So can you give us a little background on this tool?
Well, this is the CME Fed Watch, and this gives you a target rate probability for where the market anticipates rates will be in any month related to the Fed, so Fed meetings, the FOMC meetings. So going out to July 27th, look at the target rate probabilities, what the markets are expecting. There's just a 7.8% probability that the rates will fall between 125 basis points and 150 basis points. But if you go out,
well, if I can interrupt you just for a second, Garrett. So Mike brought this up on the screen, and it's over at CME. Mike, what's the URL for this?
CMEgroup.com.
And CME, of course, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, former name, that's their website. And they have a bunch of tools over on their website. And this from CMEgroup.com, if you pull up FedWatch, and you'll see that on one of the menus under interest rates, that takes you to the tool that Garrett's referring to right now. And Garrett, tell us what you're seeing in this.
So as you can see, there's a 36% probability that you're above 150 to 150, 175 basis points. If you add up all of the range of probabilities over 150 basis points, you're getting to 92.2%. So here you have a situation where the betting markets are effectively stating that you need to be above that 125 level to be safe. You want to be at 1.5%. This is telling us that the market currently views today that the rates will be above 1.5% come July 27th. And again, there is a lot of move by the hawks on the Fed to push rates higher. Now the markets are anticipating a 50 basis point move during that May meeting, another 50 basis point move during that June meeting that would take us to 1.25%. You get even a minor rate hike on top of that in July, and you've got yourself a winning trade. So I look at this and I say, this looks like my sure thing for moving forward, heading out to July. And expectations moving forward, you go all the way out into next year, you're starting to see probabilities ticking in for interest rate normalization in that 3 to 3.5%. The Fed has already telegraphed that these rates are moving higher and it's not slowing down as inflation surrounds us.
Okay, so let's just to recap that. At cmagroup.com/trading/interest rates, under the FedWatch tool, you'll see, once you pull up that tool, in the left-hand column, you'll see current, which you click on, and then you go to the top tab, and you'll see every month's FOMC meeting. You click on July, and it brings up the probabilities of rate hikes at various different levels. What Garrett's just described is that the market sees a over 1.25% interest rate as a 99% probability, yet over
92.
At 92%. Yep. Thank you. A 92% probability over a call sheet. The market is telling us it's a 70% probability, or 73% based on the 73-cent price that you can currently buy over 125. So that's a dislocation. That's a mispricing, according to the tools that we're using here. And it signals to a very strong buy, a pound the table kind of lockbox trade, that interest rates will exceed 125 as a result of the July FOMC meeting. And that's your trade, right, Garrett?
That is my trade. I love that. 125 for 73 cents. Let's lock it in today.
That's your trade. So, So we've got a couple of lockbox trades in today's show. We had Olivia Rodrigo. We have interest rates over 1.25%. We have Brian Kemp as the next Republican nominee for Georgia governor. And we have Duke as the likely winner of the Final Four, but we're really sitting under the comfort of the box that you provided us in last episode, Garrett. So I think we're well hedged going into NCAA Final Four and the tournament as well. And then, of course, we have Trump as a GOP presidential candidate. So that's summarizing what we did. We've covered a lot of trades here on So I guess, Mike, the next question is, where do we go from here?
Well, Jeff, longtime listeners of the prediction trade, and even going as far back as the political trade, will remember Scott Supak, the legendary super trader from Predict It, and he's trading on Kalshi now. He'll be our guest.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, Garrett, you'll get to meet Scott Supak He was a friend of the show for quite some time, and he is actively trading the call sheet markets as well as predict it now. His special interest and special talent is the presidential approval markets. So he'll pick up on a topic that we just discussed, but he takes a very analytical approach to splicing and dicing the Real Clear Politics averages, the 538 polling. He's a pro and one of the most successful prediction market traders out there. So looking forward to having him on the show next week. So that's all we have for this episode of the Prediction Trade. If you like what you heard, tell your friends about us. Go to Prediction Trade on the Tasty Trade Financial Network or at tastytrade.com or on Tasty Trade's YouTube channel as well. And you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Check out thepredictiontrade.com to sign up for our newsletter, to find us on social media, or just simply to send us a message. And, of course, The Prediction Trade also appears in print in every issue of Luckbox Magazine. And Luckbox Magazine is free to TPT listeners. Just go to getluckbox.com/TPT. That's getluckbox.com/TPT. Mike Reddy runs the Prediction Trade column as he runs this podcast. So every issue, there's a story about prediction markets and the traders and opportunities over at Kalshi and Predict It and other markets as well. So, Garrett, thanks much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you soon.
Mike, same to you. Thank you very much. We're going to look to see you next week, bringing Scott Supak on. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, always wager responsibly, believe in math, master your trade, and join us next time on The Prediction Trade.